And this brings us to the fourth and last formal element in the symbol of the Vajra. That is to say, to the head of the strange beast, 8 times repeated. Now, who or what is this beast? It's a beast out of Indian mythology. A beast often used as a decorative motif. In art and architecture, and it or he is known as the Makara. Makara is usually translated as crocodile. Now, what on earth is a crocodile doing on our Vajra? Now, it's not very difficult to see. After all, what is a crocodile? What is the characteristic of a crocodile? A crocodile is an amphibious beast. It's at home, both in the water and on the land as well. So the makara, the crocodile, is a symbol of the union of opposites. It brings together both, the water and the earth. And this is why it figures here on the Vajra. Incidentally, for those who are interested, makara corresponds to the zodiacal sign of Capricorn. And Capricorn is sometimes represented by a fish goat. In other words, by another amphibious beast. A beast which combines both. The fish goes down to the depths, the goat climbs up onto the heights of the rocks, the mountains. The fish goat. So another beast with a dual or even amphibious nature. We also find that the Vajra contains altogether 10 spokes, 5 plus 5. And Capricorn is the 10th sign of the zodiac. So there may or may not be any meaning in all this, but some may care to investigate. Now, this whole subject of amphibious beasts, beasts with dual nature, is rather interesting. There are various other amphibious beasts in Buddhist mythology, and in this connection, there's a quite interesting story. It's to the effect that various pairs of animals originally were inveterate enemies. First of all, the Garuda and the Naga. The Garuda is a sort of great eagle, and it feeds on Nagas, sort of snakes. Not exactly snakes, dragon snakes, snake dragons, or even gods. And there's war between the two. You see the fierce Garuda with its enormous parrot beak gripping an unfortunate Naga in its claws. This is a very common motif. So the Garuda and the Naga are deadly enemies. And then the otter and the fish, they're enemies too, obviously. The tiger and the deer, and many, many others. And they've been enemies, as I said, from the very beginning of things. But one day, we are told, something happened. Something wonderful happened. Something affecting, influencing the whole world. And what was that? Gautama, the Buddha, became enlightened. So the effect was at once felt everywhere, we're told. Everywhere there was a wonderful feeling of love and kindliness and compassion flowing, as it were, from the Bodhi tree where the Buddha sat. It was so great, so wonderful, so strong, it affected even the animals, even those who were inveterate enemies. So what happened? The Garuda and the Naga, they became friends. The fish and the otter, they became friends. The tiger and the deer, they became friends, and so on. Not only that, they went even further than that. They not only became friends, they mated. Not only mated, produced offspring. In other words, produced hybrid offspring. So that you've got a sort of Garuda Naga, a sort of eagle snake. You've got an otter fish, half otter. You've got also a deer tiger, head of a deer, body of a tiger sort of thing. You've got these strange hybrid beasts. And in Indian art, in Indian mythology, including Tibetan art and Tibetan mythology, these hybrid beasts of various kinds came to be regarded as symbols on a spiritual level of union of the opposites. Now we can go even further than this. the union of opposites is sometimes represented also in the form of an androgynous human being. Now, what does this mean? It means a figure, a form, which is half male and half female, uniting the two opposites. In Hinduism, if I may say so, this is represented a trifle crudely. You see a figure, a human figure, and it's divided right down the middle. And this side is male, and that side is female, both quite unmistakably so. But in Buddhism, usually, it's done rather more subtly. And we very often find that if we look at the figures, the images, the pictures of these so-called male bodhisattvas, we find that they have, on occasion, female physical characteristics. I sometimes have had the experience showing friends, that is non-Buddhist friends, different Buddhist images, especially images of bodhisattvas, and they've looked at the images and even taken them up, handled them and said, "Oh, isn't she lovely?" And I said, "No, it's a he. It's a male bodhisattva." But it isn't really even male. The bodhisattva, as it were, combines the two, combines both characteristics, the so-called masculine and the so-called feminine. However, we're going into all this somewhat more extensively in the course of the last lecture.